She is a nobody. And she's overwhelmed that the king really loves her. Now, none of you Christians in here should have any trouble understanding that. Because there's not been a single period of any length of time go by that every one of us in here that know the Lord, Ron, haven't wondered from time to time, how can He love me? Now see, when you're really a sinner, you can believe God would love you because your sin has blinded you that badly. But the better you get to know the Lord, we have a hard time finding what it is He sees in us too of. Because the more we grow in Christianity, the greater our understanding is of His perfections. And even though we're maturing, His perfections, which were always constant and always perfect, but our perception of them grows so that the more spiritual I become, the less spiritual I feel like I am. If you're having trouble feeling too spiritual, let me just tell you, you're not nearly as spiritual as you think you are. I had a girl tell me one time when we were counseling over a marital problem, she told Shirley and me she was a lot more spiritual than her husband. And she continued telling us how spiritual she was until finally I said, honey, if you were as spiritual as you think you are, you wouldn't have said that about your husband. And I perceive that that's really the major problem here isn't this husband you've been talking about so bad for the last 40 minutes. But if we'll just take care of you and your problem between you and God, we'll let God handle the husband. How about that? You know, one thing about saying a few things like that is it shies people away from coming to me for counsel. She says, I'm black like the tents of Kedar, like the curtains of Solomon. Now, as we continue in here, this is important. This is a Holy Ghost trivia. Okay, can you handle that? You know, what is this game that they play? Trivia Pursuit. What's the Christian version of it? They got some Bible trivia. There it is, Bible trivia. All right. We're dealing now with Bible trivia. In other words, this isn't going to save your soul. It won't, you know, help your grandmother get saved or healed or anything. But as we will see here in the book of Solomon, several times we will see this. The goats of Palestine, the pure ones, pure Palestinian goats, are absolutely pitch black. Now, some of you that know your Bible may remember, watch, I'm nodding my head in the affirmative. That means you do remember this because I taught it to you. That the tabernacle, the second layer was goats, Palestinian goat's hair. And the Bible doesn't, see, there in Exodus, it doesn't tell you the color. You say, well, but how do I find out? Are you ready for this? You keep reading the rest of the Bible, and it tells you the color of the Palestinian goat's hair. So that you see that layer in the tabernacle, the first layer was white linen, the second layer was the black goat's hair. See, the white linen, what does white linen represent in the Scriptures according to Revelation 19? The righteousness of the saints. Purity. The righteousness of the saints. Black layer represents sin. And the next layer above that was ram skin dyed red. What is a ram? A male lamb. Dyed red. So that the picture God was painting for us there is that when you come to God, He sandwiches, if you please, your little black sin and my little black sin between Jesus' righteousness and the blood of the Lamb. So that whether He looks at it from this side up or up from the up down, He doesn't see it. It's there. It's there. But He doesn't see it. And that's what He tells us in Psalms in a different way, doesn't He? He says, as far as the east is from the west, that's how far I've removed your sin. I've hidden it. It really happened. That black layer's really there. But I don't see it. Why are you still bringing it up to me? Oh, get set free from those guilt trips. He doesn't see it. He could see it. God can do anything, but He's chosen not to. Okay? Are you with me? And so, when she says, I am black like the tents of Kedar, we know now, I mean, how many of you know a lot of these people here in this time kind of lived a Bedouin type life? You know? We now know the color of Solomon's curtains and his tents, rather. Not only that, they were made out of goat's hair. All right? And then she says in verse 6, look not upon me because I'm black, because a son has looked upon me. My mother's children were angry with me. Now notice she says, my mother's children. Now do you see what that implies very strongly? Her real father is dead. Her mother has married again. Her mother has children. See, she didn't call them. Now she will later. But now she's telling us who they really are. In other words, in the Bible, it'll call stepbrothers, half-brothers, brother-brothers, brother, okay? It'll tell you, quite often, the real family relationship, but after that, it'll just use the word brother. In fact, it'll even say brother, use the word brother of kinsman even. Lot was Abram's nephew, but he's called his brother in one place because of the near kinship of it and the fact that they were so close to each other, okay? And so, what I'm trying to get you to see is, listen, are you ready for this, Larry? It's Cinderella, gang. It's Cinderella all over again. She's saying the stepchildren were mean to her. Now, let me tell you what's really happened. It's not quite that bad, but let me tell you what it is. We'll be able to tell when we get to the last chapter. Now, remember, I've got the advantage of you. I've read the last chapter already, okay? So, when we get to that last chapter, you guys will be able to check out and see if I was telling you the truth. Apparently, with the father dead, one of these stepbrothers is now the head of the family. You know, he's the man of the family. And therefore, it's up to him to see to it that his little sister, even though she's a stepsister, is pure, protected for marriage. Now, he's zealous to work her hard and keep her mind off of what's going on out there. All right, so he gets some work. He has a work in the fields, but it's fallen on him to see to it that she grows up a decent person, and he might kind of get carried away with it a little bit. But you'll see that's what's going on. And she said they were angry with me, and that would imply that she didn't like the whole setup. How many of you know these kind of marriages, these kind of families can have some real tense moments? You know, right? You're the outcast. Now notice it said, they made me the keeper of the vineyards, but my own vineyard I've not kept. Now she's saying two things there. There's two implications by the fact she says her own vineyard she's not kept. She feels the difference, the gap between herself and the king. And she's explaining to us why she feels this way. And so she's saying, number one, I took care of their vineyards, but I didn't have time to take care of myself. So I don't look, in other words, what we've got here is a beauty that doesn't look like a beauty because, hey, come on, gang, let's all tell the truth. A girl cannot look better than her hair. This can be the best looking girl in the world, and she still doesn't look bad, but she is not going to look great. And if she's dirty from sweaty out there in the vineyard, is anyone listening to this? This girl is working out in the hot sun. Okay? And so, I tell you, it's Cinderella. Alright? So she's saying, I've had to work so hard out in their vineyard that I've not had time to take care of myself, my own vineyard. See, she's speaking now pictorially. But let me also suggest that she's also saying from a biblical type, I've had no time for myself and I have no inheritance yet. Everyone has a vineyard but me. Okay? Oh, let me tell you, the undercurrents in here are so great. I can't tell you. I can hardly read without biting my tongue. My mother's children were angry with me. Even a reference to Eve's lost children. I mean, see, you can go to the mother being all the way back to Eve, and the ones that were angry with her are the lost ones, etc. But what's about to happen? Let me see. Let me make sure you get it. What's about to happen is a royal marriage is going to raise an obscure girl to the throne. That's what's about to happen. Similar to Ruth. Ruth was dark, and Ruth didn't go to the throne, but Boaz was the richest guy around, wasn't he? And when she married Boaz, suddenly the fields that she worked in, remember, she was a gleaner. Remember, Ruth was a gleaner. Suddenly those very fields that she had sweated and labored in belonged to her. And no longer was she Ruth the Moabitess. You didn't understand it. I'll make you understand it. Ruth the kike. Ruth the spick. Ruth the nigger. Ruth the honky. Is anyone listening? In other words, when they said when they said Ruth the Moabitess. See, to Israel, that was as low as you get. The Moabites had no covenant with God. They were pagan. They worshiped old Chemosh. You got me? In other words, this wasn't Ruth. Oh, by the way, she's from East Texas. You know, that wasn't what they meant when they said the Moabitess. And so, the stories here have much in common. And then suddenly, everybody that passed her, she was no longer Ruth the Moabite. She was the richest gal in town. Now the men came by and doffed their caps. Good morning, Mrs. Boaz. Nice to see you, Mrs. Boaz. Lovely day, isn't it, Mrs. Boaz? Mrs. Boaz, we're having tea at our house. Would you join us? Everything changed. Hear me. Ruth didn't change. Her husband's status raised her instantly from being a mere gleaner, a mere Moabitess, to the owner of the fields. And beloveds, that's your station and mine. We are the Moabitess. We are the Shulamites. And we are black with sin. And the only thing that's going to happen to us that's good is not going to happen to us because of anything wonderful in us, but it's going to be only because of who we marry and go into covenant with. Our status rises simply because of who He is. Will you quit trying to lift yourself up by those bootstraps? You can't do it, don't you understand? Rocky, you can't pull yourself up to that level. That's like us poor Baptists saying, well, there's Jesus, just be like Him. Good grief. Incorrect grammar. There she is. Sister Dole, there's my English teacher at the back. Sister Dole, it is incorrect grammar to say the word just and follow it with Jesus. Incorrect. Kind of like saying just money. I knew you'd follow that one. It's improper grammar to say it's just money. Okay. It's just Jesus. Or just be like Jesus. We have no comprehension of what we just said. And so the Shulamite continues. Now, listen. She's told us, here's the problem. I'm a poor, obscure girl who's working in the fields. I'm darkly suntanned. I don't look anything like what your mother would pick out to be the king, her son, the king's bride. Is anyone following this? And then now she's going to tell us about her first encounter. Her encounter with Solomon. Tell me, O thou whom my soul loveth. I mean, she was smitten the first time they met. Shirley, you understand that? Good. Shirley says she understands that. Tell me, O thou whom my soul loveth, where thou feedest, where thou makest thy flocks to rest at noon. All right. So, what we see then is, this king is a shepherd. See, we've already been told he's a king. And now we find out he's got flocks. And she's talking to him. Where are your flocks? Where do they rest it down? And what she's saying is, you know, I want to see you again. Where are your flocks? You're a funny shepherd. Most shepherds I know look after sheep. I see you. I see you're dressed like a shepherd. I don't see your sheep. And he teases with her a little bit here. She says, for why should I be like one that turns aside by the flocks of thy companions? Why should I turn aside to any other after I've seen you? That's what she's saying. I've met you. Why should I accidentally go to the wrong flock? And then he speaks. Now Solomon, the shepherd lover, speaks to her. If thou know not, O thou fairest among women, woe tilt. Is anyone really reading? Now listen, I know you guys. Shirley will tell you. I'm glad you're here tonight, especially tonight, honey. I'm always glad you're here, but especially tonight. Now, many of you have known me for years, and I know that many of you have varied opinions of what I'm like. But I'm weird. Shirley will tell you, when we courted, I poemed her to death. I rehearsed Shakespearean sonnets. Longfellow, Keats, Shelley. And even now, on good cold days, when I build a fire, I'll make her sit there and endure. She said, I'm black. I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. I'm just an old vineyard keeper. He says, if thou know not, O thou fairest among women. That's his view, and that's her view. And there's not a one of us in here that doesn't understand that. Girls, you go to the mirror, right? Oh my goddess, look at my face. What'll I do, man? You start trying to get it all on. You know. Oh my gosh, and he's going to be here in 10 minutes. Right? Right? And we walk in and you feel like you just got thrown together. But when we're smitten by you, oh, she says, oh, I look a mess tonight. Oh, honey, you look great. You look great. Hey, I understand this cat. I like Solly. All right? Now, fellas, I mean, there's a practical side here. Say something sweet. O thou fairest among women, go thy way in the footsteps of the flock and feed thy kids beside the shepherd's tents. He says, Wizard of Oz, he just, follow the yellow brick road. He said, yeah, he says, go thy way in the footsteps of the flock. Just follow the path. Just follow the sheep path. There's the path. Just follow the path. You can't miss it. And feed thy kids beside the shepherd's tents. Whoa. We just learned something else about this girl. I'm sorry, girls, but I'm having a hard time with some of y'all tonight. Whining and complaining about how tough it is, and you go to your dishwasher, turn on your air conditioning, hop in your car, of course, I got all those conveniences too. You know, don't get like I'm down on you really, but this girl not only tends the vineyards, did you get it? She feeds, he says, and feed thy flock, thy kids. She also is a shepherdess. This is an industrious little girl. This is a hard worker. And so, what Solomon now begins to do, she is telling us how it happened that Solomon began to deal with her insecurity over the fact that even though she didn't know he was king, did you see the movie some years back, Sean Connery The Wind and the Lion, a absolute classic. If you don't like that movie, there's no hope. Only Jesus would have you, because I wouldn't if you didn't like that one. Sean Connery plays the part of a Bedouin prince, and he captures this American girl whose husband had been an attaché over in Tripoli to make Teddy Roosevelt listen to him, because her husband had been in the had a government position before he had died, and he had just died. And she had two small children, and they were watching Sean Connery. And the little boy says to the mother, "He has the way about him." In other words, he was princely, stately, a real man's man, the kind that women like and can't find. You know, he had the way. And the point I'm getting at is, this shepherd that she's fallen in love with has the bearing, has the way. He carries himself as more than just a shepherd, though he is a shepherd. There's something about him that's more than just a shepherd. She hadn't got it figured out. Solomon is going to deal with her insecurity by calming it, making her feel comfortable with his honest praise of her. Verse 9, "I have compared thee, O my love." All right, now there it is. There's the first time. She is love. Okay, do you see it? Every time you can tell who's talking by the word beloved and love. Well, not every time, but most of the time. Because sometimes it's hard to tell who is talking. But when he calls her love, that's a dead giveaway. In other words, we're sure that he's talking. "I have compared thee, O my love, to a company of horses in Pharaoh's chariots." Now, I'm so glad you're all here tonight. Oh, isn't that great? Now you got... See, it's where you're coming from here, Paul. It's where you're coming from. All right, now, this is a compliment. Because all of us, we have an advantage here. Most all of us have seen movies of pharaohs and kings, etc., back in the olden days. You remember those chariot horses with the, you know, with the hood ornaments up top, you know, and all the bells and the silver and everything, you know, how proud they are and hold themselves up, and they're decorated and have all kind of beautiful things on them. Well, listen, what we've got here is a basic problem. Now, listen to this, Jeannie, you're going to love it. What we have here is a basic problem. He is Joe Country Club. This is the king. He has been brought up at the palace. She is a country girl. It's Princess Grace and Renair. Okay? All right? The two totally different backgrounds. And as we go through the story, you will see him sometimes use the rustic countryside to try to describe her and to talk about, to make her feel comfortable, you know, meeting her on her terms. But other times, he's talking a different world from what she's accustomed to or seen. And so he's going to shift gears several times. I think probably when he looks at her and sees that this one went right over her, you know what I mean? He intended this to be a real compliment, and she's going, huh? You know, kind of give him that look. You know, because after all, girls, come on now, let's face it. Because most of you have never really, you know, had a lot to do seeing the majesty of Pharaoh's chariot horses as compared to a Texas quarter horse. Okay? You've never seen that. Some of you in here might be slightly offended. You know, if I was sparking you, that's what we used to say in North Mississippi when we were dating girls, we were sparking them. Okay? Oh, yeah, that's because when you kiss them, you know, fire lights up and you see, you know where everybody is over there, sparking up on that hillside. Okay? You young people in here now, you're really getting how old. Look what he says. "I have compared thee, O my love." And that word, "my love" here, equally translates darling, O my darling, my love, "to a company of horses in Pharaoh's chariots." Let's face it, girls, that might not really turn some of you on. All right? You see what I'm saying? But remember, we've got the problem of Joe Country Club is courting little Susie country. Okay? He says, thy cheeks. Now notice, she's saying, there's nothing to me. Compared to him, even as a shepherd, she feels that there's a great gap between them. You see what I'm saying? And you know, when we come to the Lord and see Him for the first time, even as the gospel's presenting, I still see a huge chasm between myself and Him. I can feel very uneasy at times. So did Peter. Peter said, depart from me, for I'm a sinner. He felt uncomfortable in His presence when he first met Him. And He says, thy cheeks are comely with rows of jewels. Hey, come on, girls. Shirley, with all my poetry, I never beat this. Frankly, Shakespeare isn't as good as Solomon. Thy cheeks are comely with rows of jewels. Thy neck with chains of gold. And now the daughters of Jerusalem hop in. Now remember, they don't really do this. He's writing. This is a love poem. Okay? And now we have a refrain. We will make thee borders of gold with studs of silver. In other words, don't worry, honey. You're black and you're dirty and everything, but we're going to dress you up. We're going to make you some fine necklaces and earrings. We'll do it for you. We'll fix it for you. Now the girl speaks. Verse 12. While the king sitteth at his table, my spikenard sendeth forth the fragrance thereof. A bundle of myrrh is my well-beloved unto me. A bundle of myrrh. There's so much here that if I tell you everything, we'll never get anywhere in here. I'm going to give you guys a little lesson on gold and frankincense and myrrh come Christmas time. So I'm not going to I don't want to run that one and tell you all that much about frankincense and myrrh and all that, but right now. But this bundle of myrrh, okay, girls, they had a deal going back then that you hadn't picked up, but maybe these new myrrh is very fragrant. And they'd put it in a little bundle, tie it around their neck, and drop it right down through here. So when the guy got anywhere near them, you know, if he reached over and leaned over or anything, well, you know, you got that fragrance of myrrh. Now she just exudes, you know, this fragrance of myrrh. And so that's what she's talking about. A bundle of myrrh is my well-beloved unto me. Now that's how we know she's talking. She calls him the beloved. He is the well-beloved unto me. And if you aren't sure, now you say, how can I be positive? I think the next part will definitely, and then he shall lie all night between my breasts. My beloved is unto me as a cluster of flowers in the vineyards of Engedi. All right, now, this, remember we told you at the beginning, this is being told after the fact. So from time to time, it is her wedding day, and so we get little, some statements that are going to be retrospective, looking back, and some that are going to be looking ahead in anticipation. All right, so don't let that shake you up. I should say something. See the flowers in the vineyards of Engedi. Engedi is an oasis. Look. You're looking. Here's the Dead Sea. Right in the middle of the Dead Sea, right on the western edge, is an oasis that David hid at when Saul was after him, named Engedi. So if you're in a desolate place and all of a sudden here's an oasis and it's got these white and yellow flowers, I mean, boy, what a stark contrast, okay? And so she says that her beloved is to her as a cluster of flowers there at that oasis at Engedi. You know, when you're right, here's this stark wilderness right here. The Dead Sea is right there, you know, nothing's live, right to your to the east. And so here we have the bride speaking surely of the praises of the bridegroom. Solomon responds to it, behold, thou art fair, my love, behold, thou art fair. How do you know it's him? He calls her Love. Her name is Love, if you'll get what I'm saying. And His is Beloved. Okay? My love, behold, thou art fair. Thou hast dove's eyes. What do you mean by that? Soft and gentle. Do you remember Genesis chapter 29, verse 17? Jacob married Leah and Rachel. Remember? Leah had dove's eyes. Now, I know there's a lot of people that translate it and try and insist that she had weak eyes, and they try and tell you that that meant she's squinty-eyed, and that's why Jacob didn't like her. No. She had soft and gentle eyes. That was her finest attribute, you know, that you would catch when you looked at her. Whereas in the East Texas vernacular, Rachel was a looker. Okay, in other words, Rachel was va-va-voom. And Leah was okay, but she had beautiful eyes, and that was her best attribute. Okay. But that's a very similar thing. And now the girl speaks. Behold, thou art fair, my beloved. See, she's speaking to him, beloved. Yea, pleasant. Also our bed is green. Now remember what we have here. This is not, they're not in the bed. Okay. This is during the courting days, as she knows him as a shepherd, and they're out in the field. You know, she said, where have you got your flock? She's come over. They're picnicking or something like that. The bed here is what they're sitting on. The ground is the green grass. Okay. The beams of our house are cedar and our rafters are fir. They're not really in a real home. They're out in the woods, in the rolling hills with the sheep and all. And it's poetic speaking, you know, while they're courting, the big cedar trees, that's the house and the grass and all that. Okay, good. Now, this is probably going to jar some of you, because the bride, the Shulamite, is still speaking. Chapter 2, verse 1. I know that most of you, especially you older ones in here, you love the song, He's the Rose of Sharon. But Jesus is not speaking. Solomon is not speaking. Understand one other great truth in here. Solomon, in the story, is a type of Christ. It's his first marriage. It's not the same Solomon that we know with 300 wives and 700 concubines. Or 700 wives and 300 concubines. Now listen to me. Listen to me. How do you know, Keith, how dare you say, by what authority do you say that Solomon here is a type of Christ? By the authority of Jesus himself. How's that one for you? Do you like that one? I mean, that's kind of going to the top. Okay. You say, well, where so? I'll just tell you can look it up later. In Luke chapter 24, verse 44, those two verses are real close. I think verse 44 might be verse 45. Jesus tells us that the scriptures are about him. Well, now, Jesus just gave us the key to understanding difficult scriptures. He says, if you're missing what's going on, it's because you haven't seen me in it. Well, I've been reading, have you seen, does anyone see the word Messiah here? Or Jesus? Anything? No, but Jesus has already told us that the Old Testament was all about him. And therefore, on that authority, I proclaim to you, that means, Larry, that I didn't come to fight and I didn't come to argue. If you don't want to believe it, be ignorant. I'm trying to grin with a cute little grin up here. Okay. Willie, Craig, in other words, God sent me to just tell you in case you'd like to know. Okay, so in case you'd like to know, Solomon is also a type of Christ in here. All right? And so as he is praising this girl, as Solomon is praising this girl, understand, God Jesus is telling you and me as His bride how He feels about us and how He views us. And it's wild. Because frankly, I look at you and I just can't see it. But it's a two-way street, isn't it? You're looking at me. And you're saying, yeah, well, Floyd, go look in the mirror. We don't see what He sees in you. Well, let me just tell you. You know, there's a lot of talk today about having a positive mental state and having a positive self-image. My Bible doesn't tell me that's the problem. My Bible tells me that the biggest problem is pride, not negative self-image. Now, if you're in here and you're a Christian and you're having trouble with a positive self-image, you haven't read Song of Solomon yet. You read the Song of Solomon and see what God says about you. Now, if you're stupid enough to go ask your mother and your friends and your cousins and everybody you went to school with, you know, be honest with me. Tell me what you really think about me. You're stupid. I mean, look, hey, why don't you just give them a knife? Because, man, they're going to cut you up anyway. You may, you know, et tu, Brute, you don't know. I mean, let me tell you, I've made a lot of mistakes in my life, but one mistake I don't make is going up to people, you know, and asking them, how'd you like the lesson? No one, none of you have ever heard me ask that. Never will either. I'm not that dumb. I can only handle so much. You know what I mean? Look, I gave it. If there it is. I did it. Mischief thou art afoot. Take thou what course I will. You know, I'm out the door and I'm heading home. I am not hanging around for the stoning. You know. You hear what I'm saying? I'm out of here. All right. So. But you read this and see. And listen, especially for us men, it's just almost embarrassing what God says about you. George, He's the only one that'll say it about you too. And let me tell you the wildest part, James. He knows you. And He knows my heart. And He still says this about us. See, you don't know me, and I don't really know you. And I'll tell you something else. In this life, no two people ever completely get to know each other. There are things about me that I don't want Shirley to ever know, and there's things about her she's glad I don't know. And I'm not stupid enough to ask. Some of you, how many boys did you kiss, honey? Shirley said, is your calculator handy? You know. See, I'm not dumb enough to ask that question. I don't want to hear, have you got the calculator? And what I'm trying to say is, God knows everything about us and still views us as Solomon is speaking concerning this girl. And if you don't feel toward the Lord Jesus as the girl feels toward Solly, now we know there's something wrong with us. Chapter 2, verse 1, hear me carefully. The girl is speaking, not Solomon. This does not apply to the Lord Jesus. I am the rose of Sharon and the lily of the valleys, she says to him. Now make sure you understand it. This rose out on the plain of Sharon is a common flower. It's not a rare flower. And the lily of the valley out there, these are what we would call, you know, here, wildflowers, buttercups, what are they? Indian paintbrushes type stuff. What she's saying here is, see, look, verse 15, he has praised her. See, she keeps telling him she's black and she's sweaty and she's grimy and she's tending the vineyard and keeping the sheep, the goats and everything. And he keeps telling her how wonderful she is. Behold, verse 15 of chapter 1. Thou art fair, my love. Behold, thou art fair. Thou hast dove's eyes. He hadn't even gotten to that smudge of dirt on her cheek. All he can see, her dove's eyes. And so, now, she is still dealing, you know, she's trying to set him straight, and she still feels not completely comfortable. She still feels a certain gap between them. And what she's really saying is, there's nothing to me. I'm ordinary. I'm just a rose of Sharon. I'm just a lily of the valley. A lily of the valley. Okay? Just one, or the lily of the valley. We're just common. Now he corrects. Notice now. Now Solly speaks. All right? Chapter 2, verse 2. She says, I'm just one of many of them out there, just common ones. He says, as the lily among the thorns. See, he picked up on the last thing she said. She says, I'm just the lily of the valley. She doesn't mean the lily of the valley. She means the lily of the valley in an ordinary way. He says, as the lily among thorns. That's what you are. You're not just one of many out in a big field. You are unique. You're a treasure. You're the lily. Not amongst the field, where there are many others like you. You're incomparable. You're the lily among thorns. Joseph, I just don't see that. How many of you came in here tonight defeated in your Christian walk? Wondering if God really cares or knows. I'll tell you, nobody else will see you like this. So is my love among the daughters. And beloved, what you and I just read, there in verse 2, chapter 2, verse 2, is how God sees me. That's what I wrote. That's how God sees me. See, listen, I know He sees you that way too, Keith, but you understand, I was hurting when I wrote that note. Any of you ever had that? This is how God sees me. And then I put afterwards, and the church. All right, that covered you. That was a more spiritual moment when I added you. You hear what I'm saying? This is how God sees us. As a lily among thorns. The girl picks up in verse 3. Now, he has just paid her an incredible compliment, hadn't he? Now, listen, this isn't flattery. This guy's head over heels in love with this beautiful poor girl, this wench. Oh. And she is head over heels in love with him. She is as smitten as he is. And that's the point, Larry. We're supposed to be mutually smitten. And she says to him, see, look, here's the key. She just said, as the lily among the thorns. Now watch what she does to him. As the apple tree among the trees of the woods. Now let me tell you, in this part of the country, when you're walking through the hills and the forest and the woods, you don't run it. Johnny Appleseed hadn't been there. Okay, are you with me? In other words, to run upon an apple tree, it would just be, you know, wow! Especially in bloom, because everything around is just, you know, fir trees, cedar trees, myrtle trees, things like that. Everything's been, and here is this. In other words, she's saying, you are absolutely unique. You stand out in a crowd. That's what she said. She's saying the same thing back to him as he did. And so the people that wrote the song, he's the lily of the valley, you know, the part is, I had that little part I was just going to tell you because it fit right here. The fairest of 10,000 to my soul. That's what she just said, really. And the guy that wrote that, he had the thought when he wrote that song. As the apple tree among the trees of the wood, so is my beloved among the sons. Okay, that's how we know the girl's speaking, see. He's the beloved. I sat down under his shadow with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. What she's saying there, of course, is, look, fellows, there's certain things a girl has to have in a relationship. She has to have it. We don't feel this way.